Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I am James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Michael Stewart. Stu, how are we feeling, buddy?
I'm feeling pretty good, James. Thank you for asking. I know you guys can't realize this, but from the magic of the internet, I got to go on vacation last week, and we still got our episode out. Went to Canada, so saw our nice neighbors to the north, had some maple syrup, had some Tim Hortons. Now we're back. We're still talking some divisional breakdowns. But first, of course, I want to know how you are doing tonight, James.
I am doing really well. I spent most of the last 24 hours at Wrigley Field watching my Cincinnati Reds and your Chicago Cubs. We split. I guess you could say we split. I mean, the Reds won the series, so, you know, it's cool. But it was funny. I saw an immaculate inning today, which is something you don't see very often. And nobody said anything about it until like two innings later. Like, I was like the only person who noticed. Me and my father-in-law were there. No one else noticed, just us. It was crazy.
You were the biggest Cubs fan in Wrigley for just a second.
But I'm doing great. I'm feeling good. I'm ready to put an awesome episode in the can. Today we are talking about the other half of the AFC West, and it is going to be a very interesting half to break down for fantasy football. It seems very up and down, which I think is going to be really fun to talk about. That's the Chargers and the Raiders. But before we hit that, we got a few pieces of news that we'll hit real quick. First of those is Jordan Addison finally got his sentencing from the league for his, I believe it was it a DUI? I believe.
Yes, it was.
3-game suspension added there. Guy who already had been kind of faded in the rankings to reflect that. Stu, I don't know about you, but I feel like knowing it's only 3 games actually kind of makes him a bit more attractive now, if you can get over the whole J.J. McCarthy thing, which you and I differ on already. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, J.J. McCarthy training camp stuff, I'm not putting a whole lot of stock into training camp things. It'll get ironed out, I'm sure, over the course of the season. But for Jordan Addison, I completely agree. It makes him more attractive in my eyes, even though to the general populace, it's dropping him in our rankings. I mean, you're taking him as a bench stash anyway. You lose 3 games, like, oh, boo-hoo, yada, yada, whatever. But then, I mean, this is a guy that has the talent. He's been a top 24 wide receiver in the last 2 years. He could still do it, and he's playing across from Jefferson. So you know he's not going to track the best coverages. He absolutely, quarterback notwithstanding, can still be a valuable fantasy asset, and now you're getting him a round or two later than he was before. So, definitely into it.
Mm-hmm. Next piece of news we got, Joe Mixon injured. We already knew he was battling some injuries to begin with, but now it looks like he's going to miss some time at the start of the season, opening the door for Nick Chubb. And Stu, I don't know if you saw these quotes, but when the Joe Mixon injury came out, the Texans head coach was asked about Nick Chubb, and the response was not exactly exciting. I believe he said something like, look, we know that when running backs get older, they're not exactly the same as they used to be, but he's still out there. He's still giving it his all. If I'm an aging running back, I don't want the first thing out of my head coach's mouth to be, we know he's old. Right? Didn't sound like a vote of confidence to me.
No, absolutely not. They said that he's got some wear on his tires or something like that, but he has been great in pass protection. So, you know all those juicy fantasy points coming from pass protection, yeah. James. Beyond Nick Chubb that you have to watch out for if he is old and decrepit like the head coach thinks, you have to think about Damian Pierce, who's kind of coming back from injury himself, as well as new rookie Woody Marks, who has gotten a lot of buzz from, you know, the really deep into Dynasty Fantasy sort of people on the social medias. So we'll have to see exactly how things go, but Joe Mixon, focusing on him since he's the big guy in that backfield. He's 29 years old. He's got a lot of wear on his treads as well. Mm-hmm. To have this, quote, extremely frustrating foot injury, end quote, that almost completely scares me off of him myself. I don't know when, James, if you could help me out here, when you would be comfortable taking a guy like Joe Mixon in your draft, knowing what you know about his injury history and what is currently ailing him right now.
I mean, I think where I've been seeing him going is the sixth round, and at this point, when you're in the sixth round, you're drafting for, you know, upside anyway. So I'd be cool taking him in the sixth round, knowing what he can produce, but also thinking about what the Texans could be this year is a big question mark. 2 years ago, rookie CJ Stroud, they looked like they had as high a trajectory as anybody else. And Joe Mixon last year, with CJ Stroud struggling a little bit more, was really good when he was healthy. We have no idea what we are going to see with the Texans this year. We don't know what we're going to see with Joe Mixon this year. But I would honestly be okay taking him in the sixth. And I'm hoping that he stays there, because that probably means that Nick Chubb is going to stay in the later rounds as well. I don't want him to move that far up, because I've been kind of sitting on him as a stash anyway. And I hope he doesn't move too much higher, so you have to pay actual meaningful capital to get him.
Because you're going to spend that actual meaningful capital, and then Nick Chubb is going to be old.
So, yeah, exactly.
So not great, but yes, we got a couple more pieces of news we got to get to before diving into the Raiders and Chargers. Scary Terry, he's holding out, or he's injured, or he's on the pup, quote unquote, with an ankle injury, but his real pain is in the wallet. He wants to be paid by the Commanders, and it's taking a lot longer than I would like it to, but I do ultimately think it's going to get done, James. I mean, this guy has been through thick and thin, and mostly thin, with the Commanders throughout his career, and he's still put up the numbers with subpar quarterback play. Yeah, and fans love a guy that sticks through something like that, so they love him. I think the front office should really value that and just give him the money. I mean, he wants something like a DK Metcalf. It's over $30 million a year kind of deal. I think you could pay that and still front load it enough to pay Jaden Daniels when he needs to get his first actual contract. So Scary Terry needs to be signed. He's not signed yet. We still got a couple weeks left, so we'll have to see how that shakes out.
Yep, I agree with everything you just said. Scary Terry is good for that money, and now finally with a guy who can sling the rock, pay the guy. I wouldn't be too scared off. And then the last piece of news we've got here is Matthew Stafford back injury. Jimmy G and Davante Adams reunited once again. It is very funny with Davante Adams requesting a trade from the Raiders to get as far away from Jimmy Garoppolo as possible. Gets traded to the Jets. And now he was excited to play with veteran star Matt Stafford, and now he's back with Jimmy G. How fun is that? Stu, what you got?
Life is funny like that, you know? Well, Stafford, for his part, you're not drafting him to be fantasy relevant. You're drafting the guys around him to be fantasy relevant, because Stafford has been shown to be able to support multiple top-tier wide receivers. He had Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua at the beginning of last year, both feasting, really. The longer this goes on, the more worried that I get, because I don't trust Jimmy G to be throwing to my first-round pick Puka Nacua in fantasy drafts. I don't trust him to be throwing to my fourth-round pick in Davante Adams. Davante Adams, I'm sure there was some element of get me away from the Raiders, too. It's not just Jimmy G. I mean, he's too handsome for that. But mm-hmm. Stafford has been known to grit things out in the past. He's quite the warrior, but I mean, Father Time is undefeated, and he is 37 and back injuries as I guess I'm not 30 yet, but I feel it. It's not fun. So we'll have to see, of course. But the longer this goes on, the more and more hesitant I am to be taking Puka and Davante Adams in drafts.
Yeah, it really scares me off of basically every single Ram except for Kyren Williams. But
mm-hmm. Speaking of, he got an extension to Kyren Williams. 3 years. He finally got his money.
Yeah, he's that was a really stud. Good deal for them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've always liked Kyren
underrated.
Williams.
Underrated.
Very underrated. All right, I think we're ready to talk about our main meat and potatoes today. The Chargers and the Raiders. And let's go ahead and start with the other Los Angeles team, the Chargers. Stu, I have been excited all week to ask you this question because I've asked you this before and I asked it jokingly, but today I get to ask it seriously. Dr. Stu, as a licensed optometrist, what is going on with Najee Harris?
Okay. I don't know, man. I mean, I can even try to think of the different things that could go wrong with your eye, barring the fact that he actually had some sort of laceration, abrasion, chemical burn, something actually serious to the surface of the eye. If affecting the cornea, it could absolutely scar over and really impact his vision for the rest of his life. It doesn't sound like it's something serious like that, but the more they just kind of beat around the bush talking about Najee, the more he rehabs by... He was walking laps or something the other day to rehab an eye injury. It's so strange because I don't know. He could very well have like a traumatic iritis. Iritis is an inflammatory condition that can take a little while to recover if he's taking some strong steroid drops. It takes weeks and weeks to really be back from something like that, and it could always reoccur. That, I think, is probably fairly likely in some sort of situation like this, but if it was a chemical burn or a laceration or something, it should be a lot better by now, especially with the type of medical care that these professional athletes are getting. So it's a mystery. I want to see his chart. I kind of want to look at his eye. I bet a lot of people want to look at his eye. We just don't know, James. In my professional opinion, you just can't tell. I'm sorry.
Well, that is far better of a response than I think literally any fantasy football expert could give you, because I don't know any other fantasy football experts who are actual eye doctors. But
No, there are a couple. I work with them just because they take all my advice and even don't even listen to the podcast. Like, come on, Dr. Cameron, Dr. Miller, come on. We need some support here.
Dr. Cameron, Dr. Miller, you are being formally called out on the Fantasy Footbeer podcast. Listen to the pod and respond. But I do think it brings us to an interesting question with the running backs for the Chargers. We got Omarion Hampton, who's kind of been this rookie darling people have been falling all over. When we thought originally it was probably going to be a split backfield, now Omarion Hampton jumping even further up in the rankings. And just a fun aside, I made my notes today by looking at the actual depth chart that the Chargers have posted on their website today, and they've got Najee Harris at number one, Omarion Hampton at number two. But in the most recent Fantasy Pros expert PPR rankings that I've seen, Omarion Hampton is at running back 17. Najee Harris is at running back 39. Not sure what we're looking at in standard, which I'm sure you'll give us in a second here. But are you jumping at Omarion? Are you thinking this is an opportunity for a rookie to take a much bigger role than we thought he'd have? What are you thinking?
So, excellent dynasty target. I'll get that out of the way. Right now, Omarion Hampton in standard is average draft position of 15. Najee Harris is more than twice that at 36. So he's been free falling ever since this mishap on July 4th. That was 2 months ago. Was it a month ago? One month ago.
One month ago.
Time is linear. Anyway.
Time is an illusion.
Omarion Hampton, I want to be a part of this bandwagon, to be really excited about Hampton in a Greg Roman, Jim Harbaugh system that loves to run the ball, one that made J.K. Dobbins super relevant in the first part of last year. I want to be a part of it, but he's being buoyed by multiple hype trains here. One, just for being a high draft capital rookie, that's already going to inflate your ADP to values that it probably shouldn't be. And now this, with Najee being gone, people are foaming at the mouth for Omarion Hampton. And while I think he's going to be a top 20 running back at season's end, I don't really want to be taking him in the early or late third round. I'd like to be taking him maybe half a round to a full round later. And that's just not going to happen. He's getting rich, James. He's getting rich for my blood. I will enjoy watching him. I want to trade for him in Dynasty, but I don't think in redraft he's going to end up being exactly the value that you want him to be, exactly where he's going now.
I think you're probably right. If Najee Harris and his injury history is to be taken seriously, I think if Najee Harris is perfectly healthy and the eye thing is a non-factor, and he's not secretly rehabbing some other injury, which it kind of sounds like might be happening, I think that you're totally right. But if his main competition here is Kamani Vidal, I'm not really sure that we're not going to see, you know, low RB1, high RB2 numbers out of him, which, depending on how you draft, might be exactly what you want in the third round. But I'm seeing him as the RB17. I've seen him early third round. I think there's just too many questions for me to jump at him there, as you said. But that's not because I don't think he has the potential to reach that potential. It's more that I like other guys that are going in the same area around him who do have a little bit more of a proven body of work. And that's really more my thought process there.
I mean, well, he's going over Kamara in standard, and I don't know if I can, you know, talk myself into doing something like that. It's tough, but yes, you wanted to move on. We're talking about the wide receivers next, and actually, this gets back to the bit of news. We got so much news to start things off, and we omitted this fun little piece because we were going to talk about it anyway, but in the wide receiver room for the Chargers, it got a little bit more thick. And not because he's a fat guy, but Keenan Allen is there now. He's coming back home. Spent 1 year with the Bears, your Chicago Bears, James. Had 121 targets with the Bears. Only put up about 750 yards. He remains unsigned for quite a while, but he's coming back to a place he's very familiar with a quarterback he is very familiar with. This is going to be really fun, talking about Keenan Allen, especially how it affects Ladd McConkey. James, you want to start us off talking about your little lad?
Yeah, let's talk about the little lad. So I have seen this guy sitting very highly in the rankings and climbing up ever so steadily this summer, and I have been starting to look at taking the cheese on this guy. I see a run-heavy offense, and I see a quarterback who we know is capable of making it happen through the air. We know that Jim Harbaugh is capable of creating offenses in which his best players are able to shine. We saw Ladd McConkey shine as a rookie last year. We expect that next step to happen. I'm seeing all of these things happen that could possibly lead this guy to become this breakout star in 2025. However, I want to pump the brakes on this a little bit, because what does adding Keenan Allen really do? And my initial thought is nothing. It's just a veteran to be in the locker room, and that's it. But then you think about the history he and Justin Herbert have together, the types of things they've been able to do together. And even if Keenan Allen was somewhat forgettable in Chicago last year, it's not like he fell off the face of the earth. He wasn't as fast and as explosive as he always was, but he wasn't a liability out there. And I have to imagine he has been working out. He has been staying hot. He has been staying ready. And give him a little bit of time in this offense and in this system, I'm sure he will get up to some kind of usable numbers. I'm not expecting to draft him. I'm not expecting him to be draftable. All I'm saying is that there has to be more than one target in this offense. Otherwise, I don't see Ladd McConkey commanding that much of a share. There needs to be something else to take away the interest of the defense for him to really break out. That's kind of my thought process on that.
Yeah, the funny thing is that Keenan Allen actually had more targets in Chicago than Ladd McConkey had last year. So
wild, right?
I mean, yeah, crazy, right? I mean, Keenan's not going to command 120 targets in this offense. I really, really doubt it. Somewhere around like 80 to 90 is probably where I would hazard a guess at. Because Ladd McConkey is still, you know, in the prime of his career, more talented, could very well take the next step forward in his second year, that second year wide receiver breakout, you know. But something else that we also have to talk about, you had mentioned that Ladd McConkey can't be the only target in this wide receiver depth chart, but there are actually a couple other pieces that bear a little bit of mention towards the end of drafts. I mean, we have Quentin Johnston. We kind of know what Quentin Johnston is, and I think his stock is going to take the most hit from Keenan Allen joining the Chargers again. But we also have rookies Trey Harris and the hero of that. What is that preseason game called? The very first one?
The Hall of Fame game.
I'm blanking on it. The Hall of Fame game, yeah. So KLS, Keandre Lambert-Smith, caught a touchdown in there, started to get a little bit of buzz around him as well. So they've got four or five guys that can perhaps reputably catch a football. Got a lot of options there, but still, Ladd's going to be the alpha in that offense, and he'll be well worth the late second round, early third round draft price for people.
And I do think it's worth mentioning that Trey Harris was one of those stars of that very hot Ole Miss offense last year that saw Jackson Dart at the helm. So maybe there's something there. But I think we got to talk about the guy slinging the rock for the Chargers. And that is, of course, Trey Lance. Who dominated the Hall of Fame game, which obviously means everything. Everybody knows that if it happens in the Hall of Fame game, it's what's going to happen in the regular season.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're playing against the best in the Hall of Fame game. That's why they call it the Hall of Fame game.
Right.
And if you can think about it, he is one ankle sprain. If one solitary person on this planet Earth gets an ankle sprain, Trey Lance is going to be starting for the Chargers. It just sucks that it's so specific. It has to be Justin Herbert's ankle.
All right, this bit has gone on too long. Let's talk about Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert, I'm seeing currently as the QB 13 on my end. He will be drafted, I believe, in most leagues. And I believe he should be drafted in most leagues. I think QB 13 is a perfectly fair place for him. I think he's a little bit better than a streaming quarterback. He's like a fine backup quarterback. And I do think he has the upside to be rostered late in drafts. I think that he's probably going to be more of a spot start guy this year. Maybe this offense starts clicking early and he becomes a set it and forget it guy, but I doubt it. Justin Herbert, a guy who's had a lot of hype behind him in the past, but for this, it's a optimistically wait and see. That kind of feels like a lot of the Chargers right now is an optimistic wait and see, but I think Justin Herbert is probably the guy who personifies that idea most. Stu, what do you think about Mr. Herbert?
I think the Chargers as a whole are going to take a step forward in this coming season, and I think it's going to pay off for people to be on that ride before everyone else. I don't know if I want to wait and see with the Chargers, because I'm going to beat my drum here, and I'm a big fan of Justin Herbert this year. He has got improved weapons. He's got an improved running back stable, barring Najee Harris losing an eye. The thing about Justin Herbert is he hasn't lived up to the pedigree people expected coming out of Oregon, and he hasn't been this superstar quarterback. He's been serviceable to more than serviceable throughout the 4 or 5 years he's been in the National Football League, but the thing is he's not asked to do a whole lot in a lot of these seasons. Like, only once in his career has, maybe twice, I guess twice, in 2021, 2022, he had a lot of pass attempts. He threw for almost 5,000 yards in both of those seasons. But the other three seasons, he's not asked to put the entire offense on his back and go win them the game in a way like Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or something like that is going to be asked to do. Everything is there for him to be able to do this. The only downside that I see is the fact that he's still with the Jim Harbaugh, Greg Roman, slow the game down, rushing attack first sort of thing. But with all the weapons that he has, I think he could absolutely be a steal. I think he's going to outperform his draft position by a good bit. I mean, the people that are going above him, at least in standard, we're seeing guys like Jared Goff, Justin Fields, Brock Purdy, Dak Prescott. At least two of those guys, I feel very certain that he's going to be over. He's going to be a top 10 quarterback this year, end of season. And that's my beating the drum on Justin Herbert. I think it's a savvy selection in the end of drafts if you want to go get him, James.
Nice. I like it. All right. I am shocked at how little there is to say about the Chargers at the tight end position. I am seeing Will Disley as the tight end 42 and Tyler Conklin as the tight end 43 and nothing else interesting.
Big Country, I think, is Will Disley's nickname. Big Country.
Big Country. One of the greatest nicknames a football player could have, just mm-hmm. as it goes around. Great nickname. That and, like, mm-hmm. the bus. Fantastic.
There is going to be a single game where Will Disley catches two or three touchdowns and everyone's going to lose their collective minds, and at end of season he's going to be irrelevant. So not worth consideration fantasy wise.
I think I wholly agree with that. Dicker the kicker, Cameron Dicker, is going as the K3. Remember, don't reach for your kickers. Chargers currently seeing them as the DST 10. Don't reach for your defenses. Anything left to say on the Chargers, or are we good to go go out to Vegas?
No, I mean, I'm into both Dicker. Improved offense, maybe it's not going to be as good as I think, and they're going to get stalled out in drives and kick a lot of field goals. Dicker's a good kicker. And then their defense, you kind of have to look who they're going to play a lot, and a lot of the teams around here are pretty good, so I don't know if I want to be starting people against Denver, the Chiefs, or even the Raiders, who are hopefully going to be a little better than they were last year. So maybe not too into the defense there. But yes, talking about the new look Las Vegas Raiders, I mean, is there more than two skill position players that are returning from last year's team? I mean, we got a new quarterback, got a new running back, new wide receivers, except for Jacoby. It's all new, James, and I don't think I'm excited about the Raiders as a whole, but I do think that they will be a little more competitive, like six-ish wins, something like that. But if we wanted to start with the Raiders, we kind of have to start with Ashton Jeanty. I mean, the top running back taken off the board in the rookie draft this last season. He has the makeup to be a workhorse in a way that we haven't seen a workhorse be. He's got next to no competition. Old Raheem Mostert and Zamir White and Sincere McCormick. Like, none of those guys are going to be taking any meaningful workload from Ashton Jeanty. Ashton Jeanty's going in the first round, and as a rookie running back, that is some high, high praise. James, how you feeling about Jeanty, and are you comfortable with that expensive price tag?
So Ashton Jeanty, coming out of Boise State, has had his tape jump off the screen in a way that we haven't really seen since, like, Saquon Barkley. And his skill set is different than Saquon's. He's a little bit of a smaller body, a little bit more shifty than Saquon. But I think that there's still something to be said about that, despite the fact that he was playing in, what, the Mountain West last year. But Ashton Jeanty is going to make an impact as a rookie, and it is going to be significant. I am actually going to defend him being the RB6 and being a first rounder. I actually think RB8 is more appropriate for him and where he should go. He shouldn't be ranked ahead of guys like Devon Achane. I don't even really think he should be ahead of guys like Derrick Henry. But I do think he is, considering how big of a boom that running backs had last year and what the response I think that will be from drafters this year to go very RB heavy early, I think Ashton Jeanty is going to be in that conversation. And today I saw him going early second round. I think he's going to probably sneak back into the first where he has been, although I understand why people have their questions, why people would be questioning, well, why are we freaking out over a group of five running back who dominated at lower levels and didn't quite do that against the best of the best? Why are we doing this with a Raiders team who, as you just said, is going to be exceeding expectations if they get more than six wins? I think the answer is that we've seen this happen before. We've seen teams make big jumps with small changes. And no, I'm not expecting the Raiders to be like in the playoff hunt or anything like that. I'm not expecting Ashton Jeanty to rush for 2,000 yards. I do think, however, especially if you're in like a keeper league or something like that, Ashton Jeanty is going to be an RB1. I don't know that he's going to be a high RB1. I think RB8 to 10 is probably where we're going to expect him. And I think he's going to do most of his action early in games. Game script is going to mean a lot here, but he is able to catch the ball out of the backfield, so I think that there are too many things pointing to Ashton Jeanty being worth drafting to not believe he can make this happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I think he can absolutely do it. It's going to be interesting. Game script you brought up is going to be a huge part of it. The Raiders' defense outside of Max Crosby is nothing really to write home about. And if they're getting blown out of games, they're going to start turning to Geno, as such that Geno can air it out and go to Bowers and Myers and Jack Besh, people like that. So as much as they can run through Jeanty, they're going to run through Jeanty, so he's absolutely valuable. I think he deserves to be in the first round. Personally, I'd take him in the tail end of the first round. I wouldn't let him fall to the second, but you know, people are going to have their reservations. They're going to have their warts about him, and that's totally fine. But you know, when I said let's go ahead and talk about the top dog or who we want to talk about first, I was debating. I didn't know if I wanted to talk about Jeanty first or if I wanted to talk about the next guy who I think is the most relevant, Brock Bowers. I mean, what a rookie season for a tight end last year, of value, an extreme value in drafts. Ended up, he caught the third most passes in all of the NFL as a tight end. That is a wide receiver one in your tight end slot. You can't get that really anywhere else. It's incredible. Over 1,000 yards. Honestly, pretty low with the touchdowns with only five. And he's primed after playing 17 games to come into this year healthy, looking good. It's just where you're willing to take him, James. Because Travis Kelce broke into the first round when Travis Kelce was in his prime. Brock Bowers is in his prime, and he's going at a premium right now in the second round for any sort of tight end. Personally, I always make it about myself, I guess. I'm just up here spouting opinions. I'm not taking a tight end that early. We've been over it and through it so many times. Tight end is really shallow this year, and that is going to inflate the value of people like Trey McBride, Brock Bowers, George Kittle, even though George Kittle's a really good pick at this point. People are going to feel that they have to get these top flight tight ends, and they're going to look for them early and often in drafts. And I don't want to be that myself. I'm sure you probably feel a little similarly to that, James, but I want to hear you voice that for the public so I don't feel so alone.
I do feel that. We've talked about this a lot, feeling like it's a good year to punt on tight ends, and I still feel that. The big thing is, guys, is that tight ends are, besides being too shallow, if you take a tight end in the third round, what does your team composition look like? Because you really want most of your production to come from your running backs and your wide receivers. If you take, let's say you split the first two rounds, you go RB, wide receiver, and then you go tight end. Next thing you know, you are either trying to put your wide receiver two or your running back two in a spot where you should ideally be trying to win the flex position. And that is a tough look, especially as you try to complete your roster further down the line. And let's say that you choose to go all kinds of abstract with your roster roster composition. Let's say you go RB, wide receiver, take Brock Bowers in the third, and then you take somebody like Lamar Jackson in the fourth. You take your quarterback. Then you are relying on very shallow positions to give you extreme production, and you're not really given any leeway if anything happens to either of those guys. If Brock Bowers goes down, it's not like Michael Mayer, who is the second tight end for the Raiders right now. It's not like Michael Mayer is going to come up and take that production and you've just been sitting on that handcuff. That's not the way tight ends work. Same thing with Lamar Jackson. You might be able to find streamers out there, but that's not how quarterbacks work. So those are my thoughts on that. And while we're talking about streaming potentially, I did actually get a question from last week's episode. I had a listener who reached out to me because they did not know what streaming was, and they thought I was talking about like streaming games on YouTube or something. So I think this is a good time to educate our listeners on this fantasy football lingo. Stu, I'm going to put you on the spot. What is streaming?
Yeah, so streaming is it's almost similar to streaming like on Twitch. You go on Twitch and you say, oh, I see all these people playing this game. They're playing football. I'm going to pick this stream to watch right now. Oh, you know, I want to switch over to this one right now. You're picking a single player to play that week, or maybe the next week or two, and then you're going to drop them back to waivers or free agency and pick up the next person who you think is going to do well in that game. You're making a bet on one player for one day to have a good game, and you're doing that, you know, 8 to 16 times. You are streaming the position. You're being very, very flexible. You're trusting in your knowledge and your research, playing the matchups, trying to outthink your league mates and get an edge over them in that regard. It's a fun way to play. It's difficult, but it's a fun way to play. And we bring up streaming 1,000 times, so it's good that we're, you know, clarifying this, James.
Mm-hmm. And that is our fantasy football lingo of the week, brought to you by Dr. Stu. Follow us on our socials. We're on Instagram. We're on X. We're on fantasyfootball@gmail.com. Listen to us on Spotify. All those good things. Stu, where do you want to go next?
Well, I mean, we talked about their wide receiver one. I want to talk about their wide receiver two, Jakobi Meyers. And I was thinking about this earlier as I was making dinner. I'm on a bit of a diet. I'll talk about it later. But thinking about vegetables. And Jakobi Meyers, he feels like steamed broccoli to me. And I'll tell you why.
That is a really good comparison.
Jakobi Meyers.
That is really good.
Jakobi Meyers is nothing but productive. 87 receptions, over 1,000 yards, 4 touchdowns in a season where the Raiders were bad. He is something that you should want to get in drafts, because why would you not want one of the most steady producers over the last 3 to 4 seasons? The thing about it is that steamed broccoli is not buttered. He doesn't have the upside, the ceiling. He is the ultimate high floor guy. A bye week fill-in, great. But if I'm relying on him for week in, week out flex value, I'm trying to put in the guys that can explode and win me my week because I want to win. Jakobi Meyers is not that guy. And I think in that regard, people struggle to get excited about him. People struggle to look for him in drafts. he kind of falls, and then you look at him and you say, I mean, everyone else is gone. I might as well eat my vegetables, James. How was that for an analogy?
That is a shockingly good analogy. Like, props to you, my friend. Exactly right. Very correct. High floor guy, but with very little ceiling play. It is worth noting that he did have a few games where he popped off a little bit last year. In week 3, he had 21 points against Carolina. Week 12, 22 against Denver. And week 18, which we know is everyone tries super hard on when they're not making the playoffs, scored 27 against the LA Chargers. But I do think it's worth mentioning the new faces. Obviously, there's going to be more to play for in the running game, but Geno Smith now here. I'm not going to say an enormous upgrade at quarterback. Well, yeah, it is an enormous upgrade at quarterback, actually, but I'm not going to say suddenly Peyton Manning is behind center, but it is someone who we have seen support solid wide receiver play. And if you are someone who is consistently getting open, consistently making yourself known, Jacoby Myers, I think, should see a solid little bump from what he had last year. Continuing that kind of solid floor narrative. Also, it still really only looks like it's Brock Bowers who's going to be contending here. You mentioned Jack Besh, the rookie. I know he played at LSU, and then I don't remember where he transferred to and graduated from. But there doesn't seem to be a ton that is going to really... that's going to really contend for looks. They're going to have to throw the ball. Geno Smith is going to have to make it happen with someone other than Brock Bowers. And I think that makes Jacoby Myers a really attractive pick in the middle rounds.
And that's fine. I mean, we got a lot of question marks here. Yeah, Geno's coming in, and that's a huge upgrade at quarterback over Aiden O'Connell and whoever else they were trotting out there last year. But we do have to consider the fact that, I mean, their running game was basically non-existent last year. I mean, I think Sincere McCormick was their best overall rusher, but I don't have the numbers in front of me. Now that we have Genty getting a lot of focus in the offense, and we still have Bowers, who's going to be the top receiver, I don't know if he gets a huge bump over what he has. It'll still be okay, I think. Like we said, it's going to be the high floor, low ceiling, even in this new makeup offense. I mean, it's still going to be a bad team. I mean, bench target, middle rounds, absolutely. I have heard a couple good things about the camps for Trey Tucker and Deonta Thornton, but those are the other two wide receivers in that room. They're probably not going to be fantasy relevant, but they are there, and they've been getting some nice buzz out of camp. And that does it. We're done.
That really does it. Don't need to talk about Daniel Carlson. Don't need to talk about the defense. Stu, I think it might be last call.
I think it is last call, James. Do you want me to lead it off?
Yeah, Stu, what are you drinking tonight?
So, I alluded to it. I'm dieting. I'm a little fatter than I really should be. So I am kind of off the carby beers. I'm low carb at this time. So what I'm going to do from here on for a little while is just highlight some of my local breweries. So I'm in just outside of Indianapolis, Indiana. I've done this before with Sun King, but one that I want to highlight is St. Joseph's Brewery and Public House. So this is a place I've gone to maybe a couple times with my brother-in-law. It is a renovated church into a brewery, which is the greatest thing I can think of. A stuffy old church now is a brewery. But you go inside this massive steeple, you're in this huge, high ceiling, great windows, open space. There's just a bunch of, you know, brewing equipment, and the bar is right there at the tabernacle, and you get a beer and you just look around. It's a cool little ambiance. I really like it. I am highlighting from there the Pope Meal Oat Stout, which is a fantastic name. Always have to have a really good name for your beers, but this is a full-bodied stout brewed with roasted and caramel malts as well as oats for a rich and creamy mouthfeel. This is, I don't want to toot our own horn over here in Indianapolis, but this is the 2016 Indiana Brewers Cup bronze medal winner beer, everybody. So get out there. Go to St. Joseph's on College Ave if you're in Indianapolis. Great ambiance. Get a beer. Have a good time. James, though, what are you drinking tonight?
So before I tell you what I'm drinking, Indy, my beloved, now one-year-old golden retriever, just ran into the room to be a part of the last call, and he is soaked. I have no idea why he is so wet. But I
he's soaked in beer, man. Let's go.
Apparently he's ready to drink. But I am drinking this week a beer from a brewery that is near and dear to my heart. I am drinking from Sturdy Shelter Brewing their Riverview Kolsch. This is my favorite beer at the Sturdy Shelter. And the reason why I'm doing another Sturdy Shelter beer, I do a lot of their beers recently, is because this is the last episode that's going to be out before Thursday, which is tomorrow, or today if you're listening to this on Thursday, where I am going to be giving a presentation on making the most of your fantasy football experience. It's going to be 7 o'clock on Thursday, August 7th, if you're in the West Chicago suburban area and would like to talk ball and would like to listen to me talk ball, come on down. The brewery is in downtown Batavia, Illinois, and you can drink a Riverview Kolsch with me. So, Stu, let's crack these things in 3, 2, 1. I know you didn't actually crack anything, but I appreciate you being
here. I spun the top of my water bottle. Does that count?
That
I don't
totally
know if that
counts.
Was picked up on the microphone.
That totally counts. While I'm pouring this, Stu, last words from you, bud.
You know, just get out and support my good friend James Kemp as he talks to real-life people in a real-life setting about a fake game. But we all love it. If you can get over there to listen to James, you will not regret it because he's a smart guy, and I get the opportunity to bounce ideas off of him and learn more about his draft strategy to beat him in our league every day. So I'm excited about that. James, take us home for the evening.
Aw, Stu, you called me smart. Thanks, bud.
I was going to say, it's just because the Reds won the series.
Oh, okay. That's why I'm smart. For all of us here at Fantasy Foot Beer, I'm James Kemp. For Michael Stewart, and I guess for Indy the Dog, good night, good talk.